Welcome to Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle, coming up on the programme this week.
When I look back at it now, I feel as though I had had symptoms of depression probably for 10 years, which would be set off by life events.
We weren't told ever how to self-reflect or to self-assess. You then look back and go, oh, right, well, I've been living like this for 10 years.
I thought that was how it was supposed to be. I thought that was my life, and this is going to be my life forever. And that's just how life is.
And I'll be reminding you how you can make connections with mental health organisations within your community. It's Mental Health Monday.
The home of the UK's conversation about mental health. Welcome to Mental Health Monday. Thank you, as ever, for checking us out, your streams, your downloads and your shares. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And it's always a pleasure to share some incredible stories. We continue to do it here on the programme. Got a really fascinating conversation on the way today. Based out of some new stats which are out looking at, the number of BACP accredited therapists and practitioners who are reporting an increase in the number of men who are presenting to them with depression. Now, 57% of their therapists are saying that, yeah, they're seeing an increase in men coming forward with depression. 56% of therapists also said that men are less likely to get support compared to women for things like depression and anxiety because of stigma and societal pressures. I think it's really important to have this conversation. I think there's probably two things that are going on there. One, that men are really struggling with depression, and that depression and anxiety are a big factor within the lives of men. But two, that also men are starting to come forward, and therapists are starting to see the results of these sorts of conversations being out in the public, where people have been encouraged to get help, get support, find out more information. And I think the best way to do that is just to hear stories. Hear the normal stories of normal people who look and sound like you and me, who can explain what it's like to live with depression, the realities of life with depression, but also the realities of getting help for things like depression. I think it can be absolutely huge. So it's what we're going to do on the program today by hearing Dan's story. Now, Dan suffered with anxiety and depression, and he'll tell us about the impact that that had on his life. But also, he went and got help. He went and sought support. He got that support, and he's now on a different path. He's doing some brilliant work now, by the way, with an organisation called Men Walking and Talking. Now, they've got a website, menwalkingandtalking.co.uk, and they've also got some social media posts as well, which we will put a link to in the podcast notes. So well worth finding out more about the work that Dan and his team are doing. There's also more about the BACP as well on their website. If you want to find out more information about the signs and symptoms of living with depression, bacp.co.uk/raise. I'll put a link to that on the podcast notes as well, because there are signs and symptoms that maybe you or someone you know is living with depression or struggling with depression and anxiety. Factors that fall in line with the word raise, R-A-I-S-E, risk-taking, anger, isolation, substance abuse, and exhaustion. So actually, there's more information about that there. More importantly, let's hear the conversation. Let's hear what life is like for someone living with depression. When's that first moment that you know there's a problem? What does getting help look like? What are the benefits of getting help? And what can life look like beyond living with depression and anxiety? Let's hear Dan's story.
So back in 2020, I'd kind of become very isolated in terms of inside my own head, if that makes sense. Everything emotion that I felt, I kind of suppressed. So I'd got to a point where my wife had said to me, oh, it's really be a really good idea if you go and speak to someone. I'd become more reactive to certain things. So some situations would make me extremely reactive, and I'd fly off the handle about really small things, really what you would perceive as insignificant things. And then other times, things that were perceived as big and meaningful in my life I'd have no emotion towards whatsoever. So it was kind of that point that I was, after my wife saying to me, we really need to go and speak to someone, because it was affecting our relationship, it was affecting how I was as a husband. And also, it wasn't long after we'd had our daughter as well, which was another aspect to it. When I look back at it now, I feel as though I had had symptoms of depression probably for 10 years prior to that. Odd and off bouts of depression, which would be set off by life events throughout that 10 years. And yeah, and that's kind of where, that's how long it took me to realize that actually was depression. I didn't realize I had it.
That idea that you sort of responded to different things in different ways, the big things got little or no response, but all little things got an sort of inflated response. Can you give us an example of one of those sort of inflated responses, things that might set you off?
Something like the lounge not being tidy, or the, you know, really insignificant things that you would think, well, just tidy the lounge then. But yeah, so really small things like that, which were kind of which played into the bigger aspects that were affecting my life. So at the time, I didn't like my job. I'd suppressed and not spoken about my emotions for probably the most part of my adult life. So all those things started to spill out. And those were the situations that it spilled out in, the really mundane everyday stuff that, you know, that we deal with every day, we should be dealing with every day.
Me and you were a similar age. I think I'm just a touch older than you, Dan, but actually we both grew up in the same generation who weren't taught to recognize. Why would you have recognized that this was symptomatic of something else that was good? We weren't ever taught that. We weren't told ever how to self-reflect or to self-assess. So there was none of that. I often think that sometimes almost people feel, as you mentioned there, you know, you then look back and go, all right, well, I've been living like this for 10 years. It's almost like laughable that you could have any kind of condition and not be aware of it for such a long period of time. Yet so many people have that experience, that, don't they? Because, of course, we were never given the clues as to what that might look like. We were never given the warning signs. We were always told never, you know, don't cross the road until you see the green man. But we were never told, oh, by the way, if your mental health starts to feel like this, or if you have feelings like this, maybe you should explore this.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And when I did speak to someone, I thought that was how it was supposed to be. I thought that was my life, and this is going to be my life forever. And that's just how life is. You know, and that was a massive thing for me when I realized, oh, right, so it doesn't have to be like this. But I think like what you were saying about in terms of our generation and our previous generation, our dads and things like that. And I've only started having conversations with my dad about on this sort of level now, after, you know, we never spoke about that sort of thing when we were younger, when I was younger. And that's a whole nother story from his childhood, you know, but it's a constant generational thing being passed through that needs changing.
It's that thing as well, isn't it, whereby, and I absolutely completely empathize with that feeling of, you just think, I just can't cope. I've got to adulthood and other people can cope. And actually, I used to be able to cope. Now I can't cope. And that's just, so actually the life that I thought was going to be exciting and, you know, do well at school, do well at college, do well get at university, step into a workplace. Oh, I don't really enjoy this. So I'm not really getting fulfillment from. All right, welcome to adulthood. And then, of course, that older generation who aren't educated, it becomes, get on with it, suck it up, you know, deal with it. Yeah. Welcome to adulthood and all. And I think there is an acceptance that you place on that. You mentioned, though, and you mentioned becoming a dad during that time as well. And if you want to talk about life-changing events where your brain suddenly goes off in a million different directions, there is nothing more than becoming a parent, I think, that throws into that mix. Just, where did that sort of sit in those sort of mindsets that you had at that time?
I think because my daughter was born in 2016, and then I think I had some postnatal, what's the men's version of it? I don't know. Yeah, postnatal depression?
Yeah, male postnatal depression.
Depression. Yeah. So I think I had some of that, and my wife said to me she thinks I did at the time. Mainly because I felt so out of control. That's kind of where my journey has been. I've had to let go of a lot of things in terms of you can't control everything. And that was a massive thing for me, that I felt like I wanted to be the best possible father I could be, but in my mind I was just looking at all my downfalls and where all the things that I was doing wrong, and I felt as though I wasn't living up to this and this and this, and was I going to be good enough? And that's not just in terms of being a father, but in terms of being a man in general. That's always been, am I good enough? That is the question that I ask myself with everything: work, home life, everything. I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. And that's what's changed for me in the last few years, from doing the work and things like that. But that was always the main issue for me, that I always felt that I wasn't good enough for whichever situation.
I always think as well that as a man, there's an expectation of the sort of like the societal expectations of what men do. So it places you in the future a little bit, doesn't it? It goes, well, how am I going to get to that? Or when am I going to be in that? And there's almost a point where you don't get to enjoy those shorter moments, those sort of day-to-day things. And those day-to-day things, I don't know about you, but like sometimes those day-to-day things are sort of overtaken by probably alcohol and sort of day drinking and stuff like that. There's always that element that you never get that reflection of, I'm 25 years old now. The world is my oyster. I've got loads of great opportunities. I'm young. I've got my health. I've got still probably most of my family around me. You know, got great potential. You never have that assessment, do you, when you're 25? You're thinking, God, how do people pay the mortgage? How do people, like, have cars like that? Like,
yeah.
when do I start enjoying this career, which I've spent my entire time at school and college and university preparing for, and now I'm doing it and it's rubbish.
Yeah, exactly. And like you said there, like I totally agree. Like when you get to the point, whatever the goal is, whenever you find, oh right, I got to this point, and you're like, all right, okay. So that's that done then. And you don't, and there's no like big party or anything. There's no fireworks. It's just, all right, I did it.
I think it's interesting though, because we talk about anxiety and depression. They're often the internalized versions of the emotions that people see. Anxiety can often lead to, you know, the flare-ups, but then depression, and I know as part of your story, you know, there's the sort of negative feelings that come with depression actually don't always represent a negative emotion, if you like. Often a feeling of zero, like no emotion is a symptom of depression. And I think that's another of those things where people might go, well, I don't feel anything, therefore how can it be depression? Because if it was depression, I'd be like sad face and a little gray cloud would appear above my head. Of course, that's not the case. But again, we're not told about that. But that's an important thing, isn't it? To not sense highs or even not sense lows, to kind of be whelmed by the whole world. It's quite an isolating feeling to have.
It is, yeah. And it's you know, it's like that, yeah, like you said, it's that like melancholy sort of feeling that you know, and then you start questioning yourself then, like, oh, why do I not feel so happy for this situation? And then, you know, you just don't, like emotions are kind of null, if you know what I mean. That for me, they were, I didn't feel, and I think in some ways I didn't allow myself to feel. I think that was one of the main things for me. I was constantly trying to suppress stuff. So, because if I began to feel things, then I felt as though everything would from my past would come out. So everything would become too overwhelming. I wouldn't be able to function as a dad, as a husband, as whatever job I was doing. I wouldn't be able to function. And that's why I kept it suppressed. And yeah.
So in that case, going to see a therapist or a practitioner in that field, what was that? What were those steps, if you like, to getting through the door, over the threshold, if you like, and then sitting down and starting to think about how you might, or how someone could help you unpack some of the things you've been dealing with?
Yeah. Like, as I said, going back to, you know, my wife played a massive role in, that she was recognizing the symptoms way before I was, as I think is quite common with a lot of people who suffer from depression and anxiety. But so when I found it very difficult to talk to her about how I was feeling and how I was, because I felt I was burdening her, and two, I felt as though, because you're emotionally involved with that person, emotionally invested with that person, you feel as though, you know, sometimes it turns into something else. They feel as though they want to help, and this is vice versa with like with anyone that I'm close to as well. Sometimes it's easier to speak to someone who's totally removed from it, and that's what I found. So eventually I went and spoke to someone, a BACP therapist near me, and there was no, the thing for me was there was no expectation. So when we actually sat down and started speaking, there was no expectation behind it. It was just a general conversation, getting to know each other and things like that. But I kind of, it was because I was given that situation and that environment, that someone was saying to me, right, you've come to me, we've sat down, this is like an open book for you. It was kind of like an epiphany moment for me that I was, right, okay, everything's coming out now. And I even after the first session, my like shoulders were dropped. I felt more like, felt lighter. I felt as though things weren't as hopeless as my brain was telling me.
That's a big moment, isn't it, Dan?
Yeah, it was a big moment. And I just felt as though I could, you know, there was hope. That was the thing. That was the thing for me. There was hope. And like, also realizing that I'd been playing. That was one thing that the therapist said to me back then, was I'd been playing a character that I'm not for the last 15 years of my life. I've been trying to play someone else in this like film or movie or whatever, and that's exhausting, you know. It's exhausting.
That's I wonder if you, well, we mentioned being the same age, you probably grew up watching American TV shows where they always talked about going and seeing a therapist, and we saw, what is that thing that they used to talk about? Yeah, well, I was telling my therapist. There was a remote there. Oh, right. No, I can see why, actually, regularly checking in with somebody throughout, probably they would have been in their 20s if it was friends or something like that.
Yeah.
That could actually be something which is actually fruitful and beneficial. It seems simply saying, you know, why didn't I do this sooner? Because it suggests, you know, this world of regret. But it is that thing where there's so many people in the world now, I think, who are in the difficult places from their mental health. And that idea that where you just take that proactive step and go, right, you know, I'm just going to let this go, I'm just going to have out with it, that actually that pathway can change. And it's in our power, if you like, to change that pathway, as long as we got the right support around us.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Like you said there, it's the feeling of, right, I'm in control. That person then feels empowered to actually change their own life because they are capable of doing it. I think that's the thing that changed for me. Like I said earlier on, is the constantly feeling out of control, constantly trying to pull things back, control things. And like therapy in a strange way kind of helped me to let things go, but also control other aspects of my life, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, absolutely. You mentioned the BACP before. They've got a bit on their website about this raise awareness, the signs and symptoms, if you like, that there might be something going on. Raise, spelled RAISE, risk-taking, anger, isolation, substance abuse, and exhaustion. If there was a tick box of that, Dan, would you be sort of like 3 out of 5, 4 out of 5 in terms of those experiences?
Like in terms of, so exhaustion was definitely on there. Exhaustion, felt emotionally exhausted all the time, which then kind of moved into physical exhaustion. I think in terms of substance abuse, nothing on the drug spectrum. But as I mentioned to other people I've spoken to, I wasn't a massive drinker, but it was kind of a like a relaxant for me. It was kind of a go-to thing if I was really stressed for a couple of beers. So about a year and a bit ago, I gave up alcohol totally. It was kind of just it wasn't because I had an issue that way, but it wasn't serving me. It didn't serve me. And it majority of the time when I drank, if I for whatever went out and had a few drinks, the next day I felt exhausted. I felt so physically drained, anxious. It was kind of one of those things that I could remove that really helped me. Yeah,
absolutely. You touched on the anger and isolation as well. And it's worth, I think it's about the education, isn't it? It's worth men in particular knowing if they're becoming more prone to any one of those factors, to then thinking, you know what, I might go and get some support. A survey said half of therapists in the BACP reported an increase in men presenting with depression. And at the same time, 56% of those said that they felt that men were less likely to get support because of societal pressure and stigma. There is a big stigma around this. What I like about the fact that this is that it sounds like men are getting help. I know it sometimes looks as if it's a sign that a lot of men are dealing with more depression. To me as well, there's another story, which is that men are starting to say, oh, actually, I can get some help. And you know, I'm going to say you're a normal guy, Dan. You've not grown up with surrounded by therapists and just thinking, well, of course I'm going to go to therapy. That idea that, you know, just blokes can just go and get help and support therapy really normalizes things, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does. And that, like you said there, it's that men putting their hand up and saying, right, I need help now, you know? And, you know, they always use that analogy of if you had a broken leg, you'd go and get it sorted, you know. And it does fit, to be fair, that men value their physical health sometimes more than their mental health. For me, it all turned into one thing. It all came into one big ball, I suppose, that I was feeling physically and mentally exhausted, and that all came out for me. But yeah, I think men are finding it, like the organization I run, Men Walking and Talking, we run men's walking groups and online groups where men come together and they can just speak openly about whatever they're feeling from that week. And there's a place for therapy and there's a place for that. And it's kind of trying to get men to realize that it's a constant thing. It's a constant, you have to be looking after your mental health consistently all the time, not I'm just going to pop to therapy and then I'll go again in 2 years' time, or I'm going to go and speak to someone and then I'll pop back when I feel really low. It's like you need to be consistent with it.
I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I think that sometimes the people will feel like a little bit like, I've got a headache, so I'll take a... you know, I'll take an aspirin or whatever, paracetamol. Oh, I feel better now. I don't have that headache. Why did you? Well, find out why you had the headache in the first place, because what you don't want is for it to come back. You mentioned the walking and talking things. Now, at the point of view when you sort of step away from the therapy and kind of go, okay, I've assessed where I'm at. There obviously then has to be next steps, and that might be continue checking with a therapist or a mental health practitioner. You've obviously decided to do something else as well, be really proactive in that space as well. Just tell us about the sort of community that comes around when you set up something like Walking and Talking.
Yeah, so off the back of, I went to therapy for about probably 6 months, and off the back of that, I started to feel more confident to have conversations with other men about how I was feeling emotionally and how they were feeling emotionally. It felt as though as soon as I was opened that door, they'd be like, oh yeah, I felt like that. And I'm speaking to like men I've known for a long time, and I'm like, right, so we've never had this conversation, but you've been feeling exactly the same way, but we've all just been doing our own thing. And that was kind of the premise for starting Men Walking and Talking. It was the trying to give men a space where They can just turn up. There's no expectation, and they can bring what they want to bring. So they can either, they can speak about their week and how their week's been, or they can speak about something deeper that's going on in their lives. And it kind of opened up doors for me that I started one initial group in the village where I live, and now we have almost 20 groups around the country. So it kind of shows the need, and it's like kind of that first step for men to come into that sort of space where they feel as though they can access mental health provision. So we can signpost them then into whichever way they need to get professional help.
That sense of community that comes around that as well, that almost the routine of it as well, like you go to the session and even if you don't say anything that week, that actually having that thing to look forward to, even if you don't do any of the talking, you still get to do the walking and actually just walking and being out in nature or being, you know, exerting yourself in a physical way is good for your mental health. And I think it builds into it, doesn't it, that idea that actually there is an ongoing thing that we can do to keep on top of our mental health.
Yeah, and like you said, with the community, it's so not just men, but people in general in the society we've created feel very isolated, feel as though they're, you know, they go from week to week. I speak to loads of guys who go from week to week. They live on their own, and now they work at home, so they work remotely. They'll not see any. Like a guy came to one of our groups a few weeks back, and he'd not seen a person physically in 3.5 weeks. And it's just, and like, that's just not healthy, is it?
Solitary confinement was a punishment, right? So like, that's what you did. But that comes into that wider thing, doesn't it? About having the awareness of that. Like, you know, people who drink loads, people who then, you know, don't get a good night's sleep or stay up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning doing whatever, and then getting up and going to work at 7 a.m. and then not eating well and then not socializing. There's almost something almost prehistoric about that, which is sort of like bad practice. We almost think that we've evolved beyond the need to sleep, eat well, exercise regularly, act within a communal group. But actually those things, it's a little bit back to nature. It's not getting a return to the caveman days as such, but like, There's a humanity about that that means you check in with people who are like you. That means that your body has the capability to have all the things inside it that it needs. That when you reach out within a community, there is a community there to reach back in and to interact with you. I think that's so huge, isn't it, in terms of people's lives? Because isolation takes all of that stuff away from you.
Yeah, it does. And like I said, we have so many people that just don't have been isolated for years and years and years and have now developed severe mental health issues from that isolation. But it can be changed. It can be changed so much by just the simple act of meeting physically with people. And like you said, we haven't, our brains have not evolved in the 300,000 years, 200,000 years or whatever much. So we still need physical groups around us, not just a screen. I know I'm talking to on a screen now, but not just that. We need physical people around us because we're supposed to live in small communities. That's what we're supposed to do.
Absolutely. I always find, and I think we've kind of maybe represented this as well, Dan, that once you cut into that mental health conversation as well, so many of the other societal barriers that you'd be like, oh, do I speak to him? Do I know him? What job does he do? Is he too rich? Does he drive a nice car? Did he used to bully me at school? When you cut into that mental health conversation, the conversation flows really quickly because people drop straight away. All these, like, it's kind of been proved by this conversation today that we met for the first time and, you know, sharing details about our own personal experiences. Because you cut through straight away a lot of the nonsense that you've tried to, as you mentioned there, act or portray. It just goes to, who are you? How do you feel? Are you doing okay? How are you getting on? You know, those things are much more simple to deal with and don't require any preconceptions about who somebody is or where they're from or what they've gone through.
No, exactly. And I think we're like that. That's an interesting statement you made then when you said about like how are you and who are you? That's the thing. And a lot of people just identify purely by, oh, this, I, who are you? So I'm this guy and I do this job, or I'm this guy and I'm this. But people never actually talk about, no, who are you? Who are you on a deeper level, you know? And that, for, like, for me, that's what changed. And I was, for years, I was identify myself as my role or as a dad or as a husband or whatever. And I would, you know, 3.5 years ago, I wouldn't have even, if someone had said to me, right, can we have a chat about how you're feeling? I would have literally cut them down. I didn't even think mental health was a real thing. And that's like, that's the sort of change in my mindset that's helped me create this and helped me to do things like this, you know? Just by actually being open and honest and trying to create a space for other people. And like you said, just dropping down your barriers. That's the thing. Drop down your barriers, because everyone is going through something. And when you have that deeper, more meaningful conversation, that's when you get to that stuff.
I think as well, like, labels are so like prominent, you that you're like, oh, what do you do? It's like, what do you do? It's always like, what's your job? Like, name and job. Or like, you bump into someone from school, what have you been up to? Whereas now, I tend to just, because labels still exist and they're very helpful because they help give people an idea. But I always now, depending on who I am and who I'm being where I am, like, if I'm out visiting, like, a garden center, I'm just a guy who loves gardening. If I'm with my kids, I'm their dad. If I'm in a work environment, I'm the guy off the, you know, off the radio. If I'm, and I think you can kind of pick and choose, as opposed to going, well, who am I? Let me take, you know, let me push out my chest and tell you my you know, my entire back catalog. You can just be, who do I need to be for this particular moment? I could be an innocent bystander if I want. I'm just an interested party. I'm just a guy who's dropping somebody off, you know, or I'm such a buddy's mate, or I knew somebody from school. I think that thing where you can be a little bit more present about who you are, as opposed to thinking, now, who am I? Well, I studied for 8 years to become, you know, and it becomes a little bit TT, doesn't it? Whereas actually, if you just cut through that, like, how are you feeling? What are you up to? Oh, yeah. Oh, do I know you from that? Do I recognize you from that? Oh, I was at that football match, or I saw that film, or I'm a big fan of that thing that you're into as well. It just allows us, it just gives people other permissions to then find a conversation or find that sense of community. So I think it's really huge. Tell people, tell us how we can get involved in the events that you were organizing across those groups you mentioned.
So, yeah, so we're on social media, Facebook, Instagram, at Men Walking and Talking, and our website is menwalkingandtalking.co.uk. All the information's on there.
Great, and we'll put the links to that on the podcast notes as well. We mentioned the BACP as well and their Raise campaign at the moment. If that resonates with you, if you want to find out some more information, they've got a brilliant website, which has got plenty of information on there, bacp.co.uk/raise. That's bacp.co.uk/raise, and I will put that in the podcast notes as well. Dan, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you joining us on Mental Health Monday.
Thanks, Mike.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's podcast. Thanks for checking out Mental Health Monday. My name is Mick Coyle. You can find me on Twitter at Mr. Mick Coyle. You can also find me, Mick Coyle, on Facebook as well. Don't forget, if you want to speak to somebody about your mental health, you can do so. The Samaritans, free to call on 116 123. You can find mental health services where you are. Just look for the Hub of Hope. Type in your postcode. It'll find those mental health services close to you. And for support in a crisis, you can text SHOUT to 85258. That's if you're experiencing a personal crisis, you're unable to cope and need support. Shout to 85258. That's a text line. Do get involved in those services. In an absolute emergency, always remember the number to call is 999. Thanks for downloading the podcast this week. We'll be back next week with more Mental Health Monday.